All right.
Good morning.
Welcome back. This is the I Am Sorry About Last Night podcast, part of the Social Podcast Network. www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. Local folks doing local podcasts. Good morning, July 3rd, 2023. Beautiful day here on the East Coast. It is hot. It is humid. And it's sort of smoky. And that just seems to be the ticket lately. And but whatever, I don't know. It seems okay. It's a beautiful day. Just had a great weekend. Obviously, 4th of July holiday week seems to be sort of because of where the holiday falls on a Tuesday. So it just seems to be 4th of July for a whole week, and which is fun, right? A lot of people in town, a lot of people enjoying the beach. Got to do, it is Monday. I'm working today. I had to shuffle my schedule around a little bit because of the holidays so that I could have a couple days off. I wanted to be off on the 4th. I was supposed to work, had to move my schedule around, so now I'm going to work today, and I'm going to take off tomorrow, so that'll be fun. But yeah, great weekend. You know, just another great reminder that, for me, at least, sobriety is working, right? Fourth of July used to be obviously a big drinking weekend for me. And the end of my drinking, I drank every day like it was the 4th of July. But early on in my discovery time, 4th of July would always be a big time, especially when I was younger, you know, 17, 18, 19. You know, we'd do a lot of fun stuff for the 4th of July and you know, just let loose, right? Get wild. And grateful. I'm not going to say that I regret my past, right? I don't. I had a lot of fun. I had a lot of time in my life where I drank, and it wasn't as big of a mess as it used to be, right? It was just, you know, a lot of bumps and bruises and scrapes and, you know, some disagreements, but not the continuous drinking like I was doing at the end. And so, you know, I have a lot of great memories of this weekend. You know, there is one of the last memories I have of 4th of July was going down to, there's a town where we live called Dewey Beach, and it is a big party town, right? I mean, I don't know if they want to be known as that. I think they used to. Maybe they're trying to make it more family. I don't know. But back in those days, it was party town. And I remember going down to this bar, and I think it was like a Sunday morning, and drinking Bloody Marys and then having to call my brother to come pick me up. And this is how long ago. I had to call him from a payphone. So it's been a bit. And he came and got me. I crawled into the car and off we went. And I think I had to sleep it off and then got up later that morning and drank some more, right? Second half of the day. And yeah, I'm glad those days are over. I'm glad those days are over. We have, you know, we had a great weekend, very chill, relaxing, hanging out with the kids, going to the pool, shooting off fireworks, all legal, of course. And, you know, had my dad over, just really, you know, enjoying the fruits, basically, of deciding to be sober, right?
Not yet found. But this up.
Yes. Black Crowes, Soul Singing. Great song. But yeah, you know, just grateful, grateful, grateful that I do not have to experience that drama anymore. And it is the start of a new week. Back to the grind. Holidays, parties, all the wonderful things that come in our life can't take away from the fact that I still need to go to meetings and work a program, right? There's no, well, it's up to me, right? There are days off. I can take whatever days off I'd like, right? But it is up to me, and I know what I like to do, and I know what's been working. And so back to the grind, right? Back to meeting tonight. It is Monday, and we're starting the 10th step. And, you know, it's funny. All this 8th and 9th step, it's really opened up my eyes to some stuff, right? Just a different perspective on some of these things. But the 10th step is always wonderful because this is the step where it allows you to clean up any mess that you make immediately, right? Any mess that I make, I shouldn't say you, I make, I can clean it up immediately. And, you know, that is one of the, over this process of getting sober and experiencing all this, one of the things that I realized is that I used to carry around a lot of shit, right? A lot of fucking shame, a lot of guilt, right? A lot of embarrassment. You know, the memories of things that I would do and carry around, you know, whether somebody even knew it or not, right? You know, I used to get pounded every night, fall over, break stuff, get cut, you know, pass out. A lot of the times nobody ever saw that stuff, right? It was at the end of my drinking, it was usually just me, right? Nobody drank like I did. You know, I was a drunk driver, so I just stayed at home. And that guy made a lot of guilt and shame in my mind. And you carry that stuff around. I would carry that around. It was like a fucking pack rat of just history. And, you know, this program is great. You know, I shared this, I don't know, last week. You know, I needed to clean myself up. I needed to, you know, dismantle this pile of shame and guilt that I carried around on my back. You know, one thing at a time, and to start to, you know, let my shoulders come back up, right? To let me start to stand straight up again, because I'd been so hunched over with all this shit. And I don't mean literally, but, you know, it's just a burden. And, you know, these steps, you know, if a person was going to get sober and change their life and try to clean it up, you know, one of the things to me that would seem important would be cleaning up all of my history. Right, I did come into this program with a shitload of history. And maybe to some people, you know, it wouldn't seem like that big of a deal, but to the person carrying around, it's a huge burden. And so these steps are so great at helping me try to take that wood pile apart, right? And the 10th step is the one that just sort of allows us to not create the wood pile again. And I've always been grateful for that. I've said before, one of the things that I was ready to do when I got sober was make amends, right? I had, you know, because as a person that was in my addiction, anytime I would make amends, most people would be like, yeah, yeah, right. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're going to just do it again, right? It's not like you're stopping drinking. You're just getting yourself out of fucking a pickle again. And they were absolutely right. And so when I finally was able to stop drinking, right? And I don't just mean for a day, I don't just mean for a week, but started to get a little bit of time, it felt good to at least be able to say, hey, you know what, I've made a mess of this, I apologize. And you know, like it said, and people talked about, not everybody is accepting, right? You know, that living amends is important, because a lot of people just sit back and wait, right? We know what you're going to do. History shows it. And, you know, it's almost like you don't want to get into being sober just to prove them wrong, right? I mean, you got to, it may be a good motivation early on, but, you know, after a while, we have to just start to settle in and start to enjoy the peace that comes along with sobriety and hopefully serenity, right? I think, you know, usually that humiliating moment usually takes care of the drinking, but the steps of this program help us try to find, at least help me, try to guide me down the path to serenity. And serenity to me is to be free of all that shit, right? Clean it up, make our amends, recognize it, understand who we are, who we're capable of being, right? Maybe we're not that way today, but we're capable of it. Put some drinks in us and we're different people. So it's great to make these lists to see what we've done, what we're capable of doing, and if we are in the bottle, what we will absolutely do again. And then it starts to give us these opportunities to really make an amends and clean it up. Whether people want to hear it or not, that's up to them, right? We don't want to cause any more problems. But if we can clean some stuff up, you know, if we have to pay some money back, whatever it is, obviously, talk to your sponsor, right? I don't think if you stole money, I don't know if it's a good idea to just go back in with the money. Have a conversation. A lot of people, I think, that have stolen money or taken money, right? Whatever you want to say it is. We'll donate, right? We'll donate to the cause. I don't know. These are something to work with your sponsor. But the point is, it's just about getting rid of all the shame and guilt that we've been dragging around for so long. And once we finally go through those steps and we finally get to that place where we're hopefully pretty vanilla, right? Pretty neutral, right? We've cleaned up most of it, hopefully. And, you know, our attitude is we do not want to continue behaving that way. So hopefully we're in a pretty neutral spot. And then we start having the 10 step. And so I'll just read it because that's what I do. It says, continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, we promptly admitted it. Continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. You know, the fourth and the fifth step allow us to take that moral inventory, right? My buddy always says, once you do a four step, you never have to do a four step again. I've done a four step a couple times only because I just wasn't quite on board. Maybe I just didn't quite understand. Maybe my motivation was a little skewed, right? Early on when I started doing a four step, it was really about how many people I can name. It was really about quantity as much as quality, and you know, ego was behind it. You know, ego's like, oh shit, if you got to make a list, we're going to make the biggest list anybody's ever made, right? You're going to be the greatest four stepper ever, right? And so I remember my buddy was like, you know, telling me he'd do the four step. He was going to be my sponsor, and he did the four step, and you know, he said he wanted this color notebook and this color pen, and I failed on the first two. Right. And he's like, if you're not willing to at least follow these two directions, then you're probably not willing to take a hard look at this four step. And he was absolutely right. Right. So it's really the person that's coming to do the four step and the fifth step. You know, I've shared before I came in as a victim. And when I was a victim, that means I didn't have any accountability. I was playing the blame game. It was everybody else's fault. And when you're in that state of mind, when I'm in that state of mind, it's hard for me to do a real moral inventory, right? Because it's, you know, I was having a conversation with the devil. And when I came back the second time to do the four step, I had changed my perspective, right? I realized that this is a gift and I get to do this. And it just really changed everything. And it wasn't about the biggest list. It was really about just taking a hard look and seeing my moral behavior, you know, my lack of morals, really. I don't act like that today. I don't behave like that today. Not perfect, but I'm definitely not doing that today. And I am a person that uses the 10th step on a daily basis, right? And it can be as little as, what was that? You know, not hearing someone clearly, misunderstanding and saying, oh my God, I thought you said something else. I'm sorry, right? It can be as simple as that. Just one little sentence that was misunderstood, you know, that sometimes can be the kindling that starts a whole thing, right? I've heard people, oh, this person said this, they're dead to me, right? And like, geez, give them another chance, right? Maybe there's a mistake or something. But the point is that, you know, it can be as simple as just a misunderstanding. Or it can be something when we still do something we know isn't right, right? And we just hope they won't notice. And a lot of times we get caught at it, you know? That's why when I finally got sober, it was all that I could do was just to be honest, right? You know, I shared just this guy that came into this program so self-centered, so focused on self, so focused on my convenience, right, and not anybody else's, not concerned the inconveniences I was creating for other people, right? It was just all about me leaving shopping carts in the freaking parking lot, you know, dropping shit on the floor and just leaving it, you know, going to the grocery store, picking up two apples, one falls on the floor, leaving it, right? And today I'm like, oh shit, get the apple. Oh my God, sorry, sir, I didn't mean to drop. You know, I try my neighbor, which I'm going to take as a compliment, right? He called me Captain Positive because I like to be positive, right? I like to have a positive attitude. I don't always feel positive between my ears privately, right? But out loud, I try to be positive. And, you know, I'm just a half full guy. And I think I take that from getting sober. And, you know, when I was in my addiction and doing the things I was doing, nobody was looking for Captain Positive, right? Nobody was looking for the uplifting guy. I wanted to be. I feel like for me, that's the person that I am. I like to be positive. I like to help, right? I like to participate. I like to be involved. I like to show up early, right? I like to be positive in my life today. This program didn't teach me that. This program taught me how to get rid of all this the fucking lumber off my back so that I could be that person, right? I didn't want to be a fugazi, right? A fake, a phony, right? I don't want to be that guy that's in my addiction behaving the way I am but still trying to be Mr. Positive. It's like, save it, dude, right? But when I finally was able to get sober, it gave me the green light to have a positive lifestyle and a positive existence and a positive attitude, right? And, you know, working this recently, just that eight step, you know, I was carrying around some victim stuff. And when I had this kind of epiphany where I made a list of all the people that had harmed me, I sort of started to realize, and I knew it. I mean, I was aware of it. But I just had this light go off that says, you know, you played a role in that shit too. And I was like, damn it, right? And how did that happen? What did I have to do? First of all, I had to be willing to take a look at it, right? Some people will not, right? I've even been that way. There's been times in my life where I refused to take a look at a situation, right? And, but with this situation, you know, I had to become willing to take a look at it, to be honest, to recognize, right, be willing to say that maybe this some of this stuff was my fault. I didn't like to do that. I like to apologize when I got pushed into a corner, right? I like to apologize when I got caught. But to just, in general, no, not in the past. And, you know, these steps right here change that. And the 10th step is awesome, right? Because I will say that if you do a good 8 and 9 step and you have the 10 step, hopefully you shouldn't have to do those again. You know, someone was saying, well, your moral inventory in the 4th step can be used for the 5th step and can be used for the 8th step. I guess. I don't know. I didn't really think about it that way. But the funny thing is that some of the people that were on my list that had harmed me, we're not on on my 4th step, right? And they were sort of camouflaged by me feeling like a victim of some of these situations. And when I feel like a victim in a situation, I don't look at it. It's almost in a separate category, right? I'm not even going to pay any attention to any of that. So when I did that 8th step and made that list of the, in the reverse, right, of all the people that harmed me, it actually added some people to my 4th step. And, you know, the point is that, at least for me, I feel like I've done a great 8th and 9th step. I don't feel like I need to go back and do that anymore. I'm sort of past it now. But it is, I know, it turns out to be there's a lot of things that I wasn't accountable for. And until I became accountable, they were just things that weren't my fault, right? And so I've kind of opened up a few more things on the list. But the reality is that I've done a pretty decent 8th and 9th step, and I feel good about it. And so today, I really just get to rely on my 10th step. Right. You know, whether it's at work, right, it's at home, whether it's with my kids, you know, my son's going to college and You know, he's like, I told him he went on a trip and I said, I'll give you some money. And he goes, well, I'm not sure if I need it. I go, well, I'll hold it then. I'll hold the money until you need it. And so he calls me the other day. He goes, I need that money. And I go, well, why? Right? Why do you need the money? He's like, I just need it. The trip is expensive and I need to kind of refurbish my funds, right? And I started to kind of get into the questions and I'm like, that wasn't the deal, right? The deal wasn't like, yeah, I'll give you the money if you have a good reason. The reality was I was going to give him the money to take on his trip and have fun, right? No questions asked. And I don't have to ask questions with David. He's a great kid. But I started to ask him and he's like, geez, I feel bad for even asking for money. And I'm like, you know what? I'm sorry. I shouldn't have done that. I shouldn't have asked. I don't know what my problem is. Sometimes though, I'm excited about doing something, especially giving my kids money. Yes, I'm going to give you some money because inside, privately, I feel like sort of like a hero, right? Look at me. I'm giving my kids money. I'm a cool dad. And unfortunately, that feeling starts to fade after, you know, a few hours and then completely forgotten days. And so when he does ask for the money, that the thrill of being an awesome dad is gone. And now it's just this guy that's got to give out the cash. And, you know, I had to make a little 10-step on that. I had to make a little amends to him. I was like, you know, I'm sorry. It is your money. I said I would give it to you regardless. Didn't matter, right? This was really a graduation gift. And, you know, if he wanted to use it on his trip, that was fine. If he needed it after his trip because he spent all the other money he had, that was fine. No questions asked, except for when it came time to give him the money. I had questions, and I shouldn't have. And so I apologized, and he was fine. It would have been fine regardless, but, you know, that's not fair, right? It's not fair. It's hard enough to ask your parents for money, right? But to, you know, grill them over it is not fair. And, yeah, it was funny. I had, I'm going to keep it anonymous this is a cute story. You know, I had this, I was paddling. I paddled yesterday, went out, had to move some boats around. So we had to be out there early and I was getting finished with, I'd gotten finished and I was driving home and I got a text from, a friend of the family and they said, I'm like choking here. basically, hey, can you tell so-and-so to get up? He's got things he needs to do. And I was like, he's at my house? Right? Like, the kids had kind of pulled this one over, like, I'm going to stay at your house. You say I'm going to stay at your house, and then we'll stay out all night. And, you know, which is absolutely what I used to do, right? I was that guy. I'm sure we've all done that, you know, tell our parents, I'm staying at so-and-so's, and they say they're staying at so-and-so's, and then, you know, you stay out all night with your girlfriend or your boyfriend or whatever, and, you know, it's what kids do, but, you know, I was the king of it. And now someone else had pulled this scheme, and I was on the other side of it, which I thought was kind of funny, but I was like, I don't know where he's at, right? I haven't seen him. Was he supposed to be at my house? Turns out they had pulled the move, right? They'd done the move. And it was sort of funny. I felt a little bit, I told my son, I said, you know, tell so-and-so that if they're going to pull a scheme like that, at least include me, right? At least let me know what's going down so that I can, you know, not be completely dumbfounded. I would not have lied to so-and-so's parents. But I go, you know, they're leaving for college, right? This is, and like I told my son, I go, you're going to college. You know, I'm not going to be there. This is where hopefully, as an example, raising you, we've done well as being an example. And, you know, hopefully the rules that we've taught you, you're going to incorporate into your life. But this is it. This is the beginning. So, and I don't think his parents were really too bummed out about it, but it was kind of funny. I guess I've turned into a good guy, I suppose. Let me see. Let's see if we can do a reading of the daily reflections, and then I've got to go to work. But yeah, 10 step, we read it tonight. I'm sure I'll discuss it more throughout the week. There's not a lot. I mean, there's pages of it, right, in the reading. So there's a lot to it, but, you know, for me, it's just pretty simple. Just keep my side of the street clean on a daily basis. All right. Experience the best teacher, July 3rd. Being still experienced and having just made conscious contact with God, it is not probable that we are going to be inspired at all times. That's Alcoholics Anonymous, page 87. Some say that experience is the best teacher, but I believe that experience is the only teacher. I have been able to learn of God's love for me only by the experience of my dependence on that love. At first, I could not be sure of his direction in my life, but now I see that I am to be whole enough. Read that over. Sorry. It's kind of weird. All right. Some say that experience is the best teacher, but I believe that experience is the only teacher. I have been able to learn of God's love for me only by the experience of my dependence on that love. At first, I could be sure of his direction in my life, but now that if I am to be bold enough to ask him for guidance, I must act as if he has provided it. I frequently ask God to help me remember that he has a path for me. Yeah. Yeah, that's personal, right? That's your relationship with your higher power, and I don't talk about it because it's personal. But I do agree, right? You know, I wouldn't turn things over and pray if it didn't work. I am an absolute believer in prayer. I am an absolute believer in humble moves, humble actions. And for me, when I get caught up in something and I become stubborn, that is just all ego and pride. And if I can push through it with a humble move, like, you know, to stop, to recognize the role that I'm playing in this, to pray, turn it over, recognize that I'm not strong enough or the person that's going to change this, right? My simple prayer, dear Lord, my shoulders aren't big enough. I'm turning this over to you. Basically just says, hey, man, I am not big enough to handle this, so I'm turning it over to you. And it works. It absolutely works. I get caught up in shit up in my head, and the next thing you know, I'm spinning out of control, and I'll have to stop, and I say, dear Lord, my shoulders aren't big enough. I'm turning this over to you. Dear Lord, my shoulders aren't big enough. I'm turning this over to you. I have to say it a few times, and it just starts. It's like these two hands come out and grab the tornado and put the brakes on it. And I absolutely believe that. You know, self, the position of self, consumed in self-centeredness, is a maddening place, right? But if you can figure out how humility works to cool that fire, you're working on it. And I think these steps absolutely teach us that, and or at least have taught me that. I hope you're learning, people out there are learning. You know, and the other thing is, you know what was cool? I saw yesterday Joe Rogan, who I think is awesome, big fan of Joe Rogan, announced, I don't think he made an official announcement, right? But he said it in a conversation. He said he thinks that his heavy drinking days are over. Now, I don't know what that means, but he said that he feels like shit and he's sort of over it. We'll see what that plays out. I feel like there's a lot of people out there thinking about quitting drinking. You know, it's a grind that finally wears you down. And at some point you're like, if I just quit, maybe this pain would stop. And I think a lot of people out there, I'm not saying Joe Rogan was in any pain, but I just thought it was a positive statement, right? There are so many avenues to go down today, whether it's gambling, drinking, partying, just living this excess life that seems to be what everybody's goal is. And to hear people say that, you know, it's not as great as they think it is, right? Or, you know, I'm really starting to want to feel better in my life. And, you know, quitting drinking is maybe not the big thing. It's maybe not the only thing. Maybe it is. I know when I quit drinking, my life improved at least 75%, right? I had to do some more work, but 75%, I felt better. All right. Well, listen, hey, got to go to work. Thank you. Later. Bye-bye.